Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to a brilliant new edition of Plank of the Week. We are sitting, as you can see, in a very different studio today because we have decided to elevate ourselves to the top floor of the News UK building. We are 17 stories high above St. Paul's Cathedral, as you can see behind me. And I'm here with two very, very, very special friends. Mr. James Max, Talk Radio's very own early breakfast presenter. I think they still call it that. And of course, Emily Carver, who we haven't seen for a while because we've all been in sort of lockdown city. So we haven't been able to get you into the building, but we smuggled her in this time so that she can join in. I suppose we should get going, guys. Really nice to see Christmas trees around, isn't it?
Yeah, they're lovely. I'm just worried about the environment. There's so much plastic around here.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about the environment because there are other people to do that.
That's true.
There are people
all
over the place.
What an immediate segue.
Yes, there are loads of people all over the place that worry about that. Maybe you should kick off with one of them.
It's Prince Harry.
Yes.
And normally I wouldn't be so rude as to have to refer, but I want to get his words right because they're so ridiculous. So, what if every single one of us was a raindrop? This is what Prince Harry has asked. What's the point of bringing children into the world if it's on fire? But he then says that we can beat climate change by relieving the parched ground. Oh, Mr. Wokey McWokerson, stop it! This is embarrassing. I know you've taken a lot of money from Netflix. I know that somehow you have got to pay for you and your wife's ridiculous lifestyle and to somehow pay back some of the money that you've borrowed and all the stuff and whatever it is and keep yourself relevant in order that you can live your ridiculous life. And there's so many problems with everything that they're doing. They're taking money from the company that just lied about all their family recent history.
And also, I'm very pleased to see that now the government has taken up my cudgel, which I said some weeks ago, that they should be doing something about this maniac who's written The Crown, who's just making stuff up as he goes along. You know, not as if, you know, Charles and Diana's life wasn't crazy enough. You don't have to make stuff up about it. But now they're going to ask for some kind of disclaimer.
Well, you see, the thing is that I don't mind about dramatising, if that's what you want to do with the story. But first of all, let people know. The second thing is that the original story is so amazing. Why not keep it close to history? Because some of the stuff that they tell is true in terms of how the relationships, was it ever going to work, some of the strangeness that goes on. I mean, the family is... I mean, look, every single family that we know is a very unusual unit. The only normal people are people that you don't know very well, all of that good stuff. Yeah. So we know that they're bonkers, and I love the insight into the fact that they're bonkers. But just tell the truth. It's a compelling story as it is.
Well, exactly right. And is this something to do with Netflix, then, this outpouring of grief from him about the environment?
Well, of course, he and his wife took gazillions from Netflix in order to either subsidise... I don't know how much it is, but at the time it was reported, is it $60, is it $70 million, in order to either narrate, to front, to launch...
Produce.
...create content, produce. I mean, what did
Wasn't
they know?
Wasn't there talk of a sort of reality-style... program.
Oh, they're doing
or
one
is that
of those
a fantasy?
Too.
Pardon?
They're doing one too.
Oh, as well.
Yes.
Okay, on top of.
The Real Housewives of Montecito or something.
I mean, God only knows what. I mean, of course it's going to be sanitised and everything. And I don't know. I probably would watch to see their ridiculous life.
That's the only thing you would watch. I mean, you would not particularly want to watch a film about elephants, which is probably one of the things they're going to do, right? Because they love elephants, apparently.
They do
but
love
what about
elephants.
All this nonsense about, you know, the world being on fire? The world's not on fire.
Well, exactly.
Is it?
And this is the, well, it is if you're in a house in a $15 million house.
I mean, Malibu goes up in flames on a regular basis, but that's why they've moved there, I presume.
Well, quite. I mean, it is such a lot of nonsense. I'm just trying to find it. So blah blah blah. Launched the Netflix-style platform for environmental and conservation documentaries. ball off. Great. It's so dull.
I might have to give up my Netflix subscription.
Does Harry see himself as sort of the next David Attenborough or something?
He obviously does. But this is the thing. You know, Harry was never particularly well endowed in the brains department,
no.
was he? I mean, he wasn't thought of as
I wonder
that.
Where
he
you're was, going with that.
He was sort of the hunk, wasn't he? He was the guy that everybody wanted to date because he didn't have to be serious because he was never going to be king. You know, he was the spare to the heir and all of that. And he was in bougies all the time, you know, going out with blondes from Chelsea. Suddenly he's now found himself as this kind of woke champion to try and save the world. And everybody's kind of... I mean, it wasn't that long ago. He was photographed naked in Las Vegas playing pool with a lot of strippers.
This
you know?
Is very true. But the other thing is...
I liked him a lot better then.
Yeah, I liked him a lot better.
I think also, look, it must be tremendously difficult to be in that role that you know that you will never be anything other than insignificant. And I do understand that the pressures of always being followed and photographed and having everything, and you're living in a fishbowl and a goldfish bowl or whatever it is and having every single part of your life turned over. I get it. But what I don't get is this very strange, oh, but the money's come in now and so therefore sell my soul to the devil. I find it absolutely extraordinary. And again, with the environment, do not lecture you, me, any of us on being wonderful about the environment and then flying to that particular conference in a private jet.
I know.
Don't do it.
Absolutely right. That's enough about Prince Harry,
it
anyway. Emily, who's your first nominee?
I think it's got to be Mark Drakeford. Mm. So this man who has had, let's just say, a disastrous coronavirus in terms of policymaking, after the disaster of his firebreaker.
Yes.
He is now telling Wales that pubs have to close at 6 p.m. from Friday. And not only that, they're no longer allowed to serve alcohol.
Yes.
So essentially, he's banning the Welsh people from boozing.
He is. I mean, it's basically prohibition by another name, isn't it?
It is. And one of the things that I find so extraordinary about this is if you want to get people on side, come up with measures that, one, we've been in this long enough. There are things that do work. So let's do the things that work. And the second thing is let's also be mindful of elements of the economy and elements of people's minds and welfare, and also what we're going to kill off. I do not want to see one huge element of our cultural life killed off at the other side of this, which is pubs and entertainment and live venues and all this stuff. We have to make sure they're protected.
Oh, yeah, they've been the massive scapegoat in this whole sort of lockdown restriction, stop, start again measures that's been going on. They really are the scapegoat. They are going to be decimated in Wales with these kind of rules. And if they bung them, you know, £1,000 here, £1,000 there, that's not going to save any
jobs.
Doesn't
touch the side.
That's
no.
just going to keep them...
I spoke to a guy today who runs a couple of hotels in sort of the Kenilworth area, right? He was saying that they get something like... He's not allowed to open his hotels, can't open his bars, they're in Tier 3. He says that it costs him about £20,000 a week to break even.
Really?
Right? That's what he needs to bring in. He's getting £3,000 a month from the government. You can't keep going like that, can you?
But you know what? This guy like looks like he is in dire need of a drink.
He does.
He's so miserable.
Yeah.
His whole attitude is just... I mean, I watched him speak and he's just a miserable git, basically.
Yeah.
And he needs probably a drink. But he's told the Welsh people that it's okay. They can have a non-alcoholic mulled wine.
So a non-alcoholic mulled
that's
wine.
That's the prize.
But I mean, obviously, what's going
to
happen?
To clarify.
Right?
But also, what's the point?
What's going to happen though is people are just going to drink at home. And when you know, it's been relatively well sort of qualified that if you drink at home, you tend to drink more, and you tend to get more drunk because there's
it's
nobody.
Oh, yeah.
One, it's cheaper, but also two, you've got loads of booze.
Yeah, and
well,
we
I
know
have anyway.
Already.
I mean, I presume most people do. And you just
I don't
open
know,
another.
Taking advantage because one of the things here's an upshot of one of the reasons that there's such good deals on fizz and booze at the moment. Is because many of the hotels and restaurants, no celebrations, no weddings, no this, that. There's a huge glut of it.
Right.
And it's no wonder that you're getting, you know, buy six, get one free, and an extra 15, 20% off, and da-da-da. It's not been this
but also,
cheap
you know,
for
if you're
years.
In a, if you're in a restaurant, right, and you say you have a bottle of wine, and you're thinking, you're just about coming to the end of your main course, and you're thinking, should we get another bottle? Probably not, just maybe get a glass. Whereas when you're at home, you're opening the other bottle on the basis that, well, if I don't drink it, I'll have it tomorrow.
You've opened it before you've even started.
Well, I mean, not only have I opened the second bottle, but because it's open, I just finish it anyway. And then I start worrying about whether I should open the third bottle, and then you really can start getting into a bad place. But you know what I mean?
Drink responsibly, kids.
As we go back to the science here, you know, we already know that this disease transmits mostly at home and in nursing homes.
Right.
It's not in the hospitality sector. So I think this is all part of this sort of Puritanism,
yes.
Sort of.
Well, I wonder about that. The one thing that they've all seemingly got in common, Nicola Sturgeon, Boris Johnson, who I didn't think would be like that, and Mark Drakeford. I'm not sure about Arlene Foster over in Northern Ireland, but she looks a bit stern as well.
Who knows?
They don't seem to want anybody to have a good time. They don't seem to want anyone to have a drink. And apparently, as well, Drakeford has quoted this Sage study, which was basically brought in from somewhere like Indonesia, right? And it's the only place they've done a study of kind of nighttime economy and nightclubs and bars and things in Indonesia, which is a very different kettle of fish, I would have thought, from what we're doing here.
Well, I mean, this has been a long time coming, hasn't it, since the smoking ban and then various different bans on the regulations, different time closures. You know, there's a lot of...
Somebody put out a meme the other day.
Policy
saying, you know, I remember the days when you used to be able to smoke in the pub. Now you can't even have a drink. I mean, you know, that's how ridiculous things have got. I actually was talking to my sister in America the other day, and over there, depending on which part of the country you're in, it's much more normal than it is here. And she was, you know, I was saying, it wouldn't be surprising if somebody said to me tomorrow, if you're left-footed, you can go out on Wednesday, but you have to be home by 3 o'clock. You know, that's how mad it is. It's literally anything you like.
We've allowed them to micromanage our lives.
But also, the thing that we're seeing playing out, which I think is, this is absolutely the wrong time to do it, and they keep saying, of course, that they're not doing it, is that each politician who is in the limelight is playing out their political fantasy. Hmm. And as a result of that, I think we are not seeing best decisions and best practice being taken. So, for example, the fact that we are a relatively small island, you would have thought that whatever advice they have, it should be fairly similar between Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales and England, and also between politicians in power and those not in power. Mm. And the fact that it's not similar means to me that we've got politicking going on.
Yes, absolutely.
But we've got the Scottish and the Welsh just looking at us, seeing what we do, and then going that one step further, aren't they? Had that with the SNP.
Yeah, well, you haven't been able to get a drink in a pub in Scotland for ages. I mean, I think probably several weeks now. It's just ridiculous. But also, the conditioning of people I find interesting. I don't know if you saw Matt Hancock's briefing yesterday, in which the first question from a member of the public, from some woman, very, very sort of miserable-looking woman in Southampton, who asked the question... who asked this question, I kid you not. I'm in a long-term relationship, and I'm assuming they've picked these questions, right? I'm in a long-term relationship, but my boyfriend and I don't live together. Are we able to see each other indoors or outdoors, right? And old Hancock is obviously completely stunned by this question. He doesn't know what to say. Basically refers her to the website and says, well, I think you'll find all of the relevant rules on the website, technically speaking, you shouldn't really be mixing with anyone outside of your own household.
Well, this is the thing. So, perhaps the public should be a plank of the week.
Well, exactly. I mean, what a stupid question. I mean, if you want to see your boyfriend, go and see your boyfriend. You know, maybe stay 2 metres apart or maybe not. You know, whatever you think is right.
Who knows?
I mean, it really is bizarre.
It is bizarre, and it is defying all manner of common sense.
Yeah. I think Drakeford, though, may be quite a good contender for winning the whole thing.
Could be.
I'm going to go with my first item as The Guardian. Now, you know that I'm famous for tearing it up. But The Guardian, you know, this bastion of you know, left liberal thinking, and this one place where, you know, everybody's kind and nice and, you know, they care about other people and they love... to look after those who are less fortunate than themselves, turns out to be the most hideous, ghastly organisation that anybody has ever been to, you know, anybody's ever worked at. And they're all just horrible people. They've chased Suzanne Moore, who's a very formidable and quite admirable woman, has been a feminist for many, many years and has written some great stuff. Whether you agree with her or not is not the point. But she was a proper feminist when it wasn't that easy to be a feminist. And she was writing, you know, columns in national newspapers when it wasn't that easy to be a woman columnist. And yet... And they've got as many as 381 people inside The Guardian, which I didn't think was possible. But they all work there, apparently, and they've all signed a petition to get rid of her because she had some views that they didn't like, which apparently were about trans women and trans men. She had this incredibly, you know, complicated and controversial view that, you know, you couldn't just be a woman by calling yourself one, which doesn't seem that controversial to me. But she's now had to leave a job that she was in for 25 years, and she's described The Guardian as one of the most ghastly places ever to work because it's been taken over by the Corbynistas.
Yeah, and these are the Guardian people who obviously deny that cancel culture exists.
Yes.
And there they are.
Cancelling everyone.
Banishing this woman for daring to have a different point of view.
And which, because they've now won, presumably they'll do with everybody else that writes anything in there they don't like.
But this is where we've ended up, that... apparently, when it comes to having a view, you're not allowed to have a view because, not because, you know, it's nothing to do with free speech, it's because you're wrong, apparently. So when you're wrong, it then means that you can't possibly have this view or indeed float it in the same way that we've got the teacher who's been, you know, hounded out of Eton, and you could say, oh, well, you know, there's a male school and a privilege and da-da-da and all that stuff. But in fact, what you need to do in order for people to make up their own minds as opposed to just being brainwashed, you need to be able to have conversations and to have not radical views which are factually incorrect, but you need to be challenged. And of course there's a fine line with these things. But a great columnist is somebody who riles you, who allows you, if you like, to develop your own thoughts so that, you know, and say, for example, you know, in all of our jobs, we're telling people things and we're giving ideas and opinions and putting things forward. It's not to change people's minds to our way of thinking, no, necessarily. It's to help you that if you're watching or listening, you come up with your own idea and decide whether or not we're right, or go and look and do your research and find out what you think. And if I've allowed you to think, even if it doesn't agree with me, I've done my job.
Yeah.
And that is a great columnist. And I think with Suzanne Moore, you look at the stuff that she wrote. Rarely did I agree with her, but it was always very well written.
Yes.
Was very
well and well argued, yeah.
And well argued. Mm. And I think that you must have people who have different views. And guess what? With those difficult issues where society is changing, you've got to have those conversations so that people either can come with you, they can change their minds, or perhaps
but
they
don't. I don't think The Guardian is capable of having those kind of conversations, because at least my perception of The Guardian is that it's dominated by middle-class, upper-middle-class North London types,
yeah,
right? And she was actually
There's
different
nothing
from
wrong
that.
With North
she
London.
Didn't, no, I know. I'm from North London. But
me
they,
too.
But I know exactly the type that The
Hang
Guardian...
middle-class, North... Oh, you don't work for The Guardian.
I was born in Hampstead, my boy. I'll have you know. But isn't
anyway...
But yeah, you're right.
But it's dominated by these kinds of people, and she was actually didn't fit that mould.
Right.
She was very different, so I wonder if there's also that sort of...
I think there is an element of snobbishness
about snobbishness
it.
About her.
Yeah, well, it's the same snobbishness that these people have for the working class, the people who they're supposed to represent. If they're, you know, Corbyn supporters and they're Labour Party supporting people, they're supposed to be the champions of the underprivileged.
Well, they're
as long as they're not
they?
Actually white underprivileged kids in Britain who they hate, because they don't want anything to do with them, because they might be racist, you know. But they've got their bleeding heart for everybody who's underprivileged in every other part of the world that they'd like to not actually have to meet at any point in time, you know.
Well, exactly. But then this is also part of the problem when it comes to analysing, if you like, what's right and wrong in society, and then how do you analyse things, how do you look at things. And if I hear another blooming left-winger talk to me about evidence-based analysis,
yeah,
and therefore they must be right. This is the problem,
yes,
that we have, is that this doctrine, which is particularly used by the left, which is evidence-based as opposed to common sense or experience-based, which allows people to miraculously to see into the future, it's nonsense.
Mm. It's also peer-reviewed as well. That's the other one that's annoying, isn't it? It's peer-reviewed. Is it peer-reviewed? I mean, I'll come onto Facebook later on, but I mean, you get this ridiculous situation where people are telling you that only they know what the truth is, and you can't possibly know what the truth is because you've got the wrong kind of politics, and therefore everything that you see is seen through the wrong kind of prism. But what they see isn't through a prism at all. They just see the truth. And it really is quite extraordinary. I mean, when you think about somebody like Owen Jones, you know, who goes around, you know, blocking people right, left and centre who he doesn't like or that who don't agree with him, or that, you know, he can't, does he?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you're very fortunate in that case. I'm also fortunate because he doesn't love me and he blocked me a long time ago, so I don't see any drivel that he writes, right? But I mean,
I like to annoy myself and go and read it on occasion.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read The Guardian on occasion, but it never ceases to amaze me how ridiculous it has now become. It used to be a pretty good newspaper, you know. And one of the things that I would have always said when I was in newspapers is that what you want, for example, is two columnists having completely different views and arguing with each other in the paper, because it actually is quite good for circulation. It's quite good for the sort of, you know, the stimulus of people buying the newspapers. You want to see what Suzanne Moore's going to say about Owen Jones and vice versa, you know. But they don't seem to want that anymore.
But also what you want from a great columnist is to thought-provoke. You want people who are going to look into subjects and also take it forward and also admit when they're wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, a great columnist will say, I got it wrong.
Yeah. And you can change, and if you're a decent columnist, you can pretty much write on any subject. I mean, people always make fun of Boris Johnson for having written two versions of Brexit, you know. But actually, you know, that's entirely what you do. I mean, I remember when they were awarding the Olympics, which eventually got given to China. You know, I was at the Express at the time, and we had commissioned something like five different pieces, depending on where it went. And of course, it didn't go to any of those five. It went to the one we hadn't prepared. So we had to quickly write something about China. But, you know, that's what newspapers do. People do tend to have, you know, two versions of lots of different things, you know. But Facebook, let me tell you about them, because I can't have them both. As I don't want to have The Guardian and Facebook as two separate ones. So I'm going to roll Facebook into
You're rolling
it
them together. On the Look
basis,
at you.
On the basis that Facebook is a sort of run by sort of lefty planks as well. I did an interview, as I do every Monday, with Peter Hitchens, you know, the esteemed Mail on Sunday columnist, and we were talking about a great many things, including the mask study that was done in Denmark, right? We posted the interview, as we always do, on Facebook, and lo and behold, the next day I went to see how it was doing in the terms of numbers, and there was a warning on it, which said that it had been fact-checked by what I can only presume would be a lot of, sort of spotty youths in Silicon Valley. You know, dude, man, hey, look, man, look, this might be misleading,
he's
man.
He's lying.
Yeah, no, he's lying, man. And, you know, another toke on the old joint, you know. And apparently I and Peter Hitchens may be misleading the public by talking about this. And I was absolutely outraged. I thought, how dare you? Who the hell do you think you are?
But isn't this part of the problem with an organisation like that? There are two fundamental issues when it comes to, say, for example, Facebook. In fact, there are three fundamental issues.
Starting to sound like the Spanish Inquisition.
Well,
as what? A fanatical devotion to the
truth. If I would ever be impressed with that. So the first thing about Facebook is they really are not clear with how they use your data and the algorithms and all that stuff. And so,
when you say not clear, you mean dishonest.
Correct.
Yeah.
The second thing, I'm just being
I'm using legal friendly language.
Yes.
The second thing that I'm disconcerted about is that they tell us that they are a technology company, not a media company. Mm. They have become a media company.
They're
and they
are
using
surely,
and feeding off other people's hard work in order to make money for themselves. Mm. And the third point is that there is a lot of vile and unnecessary stuff that they refuse to remove, whether it be anti-Semitic or racist and all sorts of stuff.
Well, they've got all sorts of weird sort of rules, haven't they? Like, you can't put a picture up of a woman breastfeeding a child, but you can put a picture up of somebody being beheaded.
Well, this is the thing. You still have groups up and running that are deeply anti-Semitic, full of sort of Corbyn activist types, saying the most awful stuff. And then you have your video being told that it's false or whatever.
Two middle-aged men talking about the coronavirus, you know.
Well, which is, I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Well, lots of people want it because the YouTube numbers would prove it. But, you know, I take exception to their kind of impudence, if you like, because, you know, I know what I'm doing. He knows what he's doing. We've been doing this a long time. We don't need somebody in California telling us that it might be misleading, because it isn't.
But also, the other thing, again, is that when I worked in the States, I remember getting into a massive barney with some of the people I worked with when we were discussing what free speech meant.
Right.
And I was talking about the power to offend. And they are so litigious and so stymied in so many different ways that the American system doesn't actually lead to free speech whatsoever. And their ability to be able to understand a nuanced argument is limited. And I was really shocked by this.
Although they're more free in America in many ways to speak about things than we are. You know,
now,
they don't
because
have...
we've got Wokey McWokerson.
Well, no, but we've always been more, much more. I mean, back in the day when newspapers used to get sued a lot by Hollywood stars, so a piece would appear in the National Enquirer, and they wouldn't be sued in America, because in America, if you're famous, you have to prove malice in order to win a libel suit. But when it was reproduced in one of the papers over here, they'd sue in London and they'd win, because the libel laws actually were more against free speech than they were for it. So in America, you could, and you could say a lot more in America than you can say here.
Well, I think without, we need some kind of free speech bill, because it's just getting ridiculous.
But also, there's a difference, though, between free speech and being libelous. I mean, you know, being unpleasant to people or libelous or
Well, no, there isn't, though. The point about being unpleasant is that there are consequences to what you say. You know, if you want to say whatever you like, you can do it in America, but you really can't do it here. There are things, there are laws here, like hate crime laws, for example,
but there are,
which there are not in America.
True, but then also you have a look at the likes, and this goes back to the Facebook, because we might as well bring them back into it. Didn't you mention them?
Yeah.
So one of the things...
You're going to end up as a plank at this rate.
One of the things that they don't have to stick to, if you like, are the very rigid rules that the rest of us have to. Say, for example, you work for a broadcast organisation, like we do, or you write for a national newspaper, like we do, and you have to stick to rules. There are certain things that you can and cannot do and can and cannot write and say. And yet, on that platform, you can, but as you have found out, you put something out there that they decide they don't like, and boom, and they'll censor it. And this is the problem.
Let's have your second one.
My second one, I think, has to be Sir Philip Green.
Ah, yes.
We have created a tax system that encourages people to behave in certain ways, as opposed to what really a capitalist system should be, which is to reward success and to reward investment and to reward behaviours, if you like, that make other people's and enrich other people's lives because they are successful.
Yes. And what does it does seem a bit unfair, doesn't it? There's a guy with a massive great yacht sitting in Monaco Harbour, basically making a lot of people redundant, throwing all the scrap heap because the company has failed.
Yeah, but I think it's worse than that because, first of all, he's rinsed all the money out of the companies. The second thing is that the tax system encouraged him to do that. Because if you're able to buy losses, use them, use debt in a certain way, and this comes from somebody who was an investment banker and worked in private equity, and therefore I've done those sorts of deals where you structure them in such a way to rinse some cash out in order to, if you like, make your return, as opposed to making your return off the basis of the fact that the business is successful. In addition to that, he has not modernised the business. And he has to take responsibility, I think, for the fact that the high street that we have is largely driven by the fact that he and others have not innovated because we as a society...
Well, he hasn't had to, has he?
He hasn't had to because he's rinsed the cash out.
Yeah.
So, whether it's Plankism or whether it's stupidity or whether it's greed or whether it's just ineptitude, a whole range of things. I am thoroughly disappointed that we end up in this situation.
Yes.
Anybody who thinks
it's
just COVID...
But is it his fault, though? But is it his fault? Because it's a bit like when you talk about people like... the coffee companies and Google and various people and Netflix as well, who don't pay their fair share of tax, as everybody's always telling us. It's because they can. It's because they don't. It's not
we
their
make
fault.
The rules.
Yeah, it's not their fault that they're avoiding tax because everybody avoids tax if they can. Why wouldn't you?
Tax
you
know? Should never be, in my view, a moral issue. I think you can count on one hand the number of people who paid more tax than they had to voluntarily last year, because we have a system. You can make a donation.
Well, all these people, I mean, all these lefties who make loads of money, mostly in the film business, who say, we should be taxing people more. It's like, well, if you want to pay a bit more in, be my guest, mate.
Don't use all the incentives that are sat there, by the way, to encourage.
Yeah, but all I'm asking
is. We don't live in a proper free market capitalist economy, do we?
Not anymore.
We don't have a fair level playing field. But I think
it makes the 1970s look like free markets went mad and rampant.
But I think what comes from here with COVID and everything is the acceleration of the decimation of our high street, and I wonder what's going to come in its place, because it is sad. You can say what you like about Philip Green, but this certainly has accelerated the...
But why wasn't Philip Green...
He should have been innovating, yes.
Yeah, but he should have innovated. But also, he and others should have been pushing, because he was in government. He should have been pushing in government for the changes where we, the consumer, have allowed a combination of the tax system to ruin our high street and to take jobs away because of tax inequality, not because getting the stuff... We've allowed all this stuff to be delivered and the vans and the pollution and the everything, and, we're just using it because it was cheaper, and it's cheaper because they're not paying the tax.
Yeah.
It's not cheaper because it's cheaper to do it like that.
Yeah, but it's not anybody's
fault. It's unbelievable.
I mean, you've been calling for people to kind of revolutionise their business and to modernise their business, and that's what you're talking about. Amazon is about modernising business. And
Amazon is about modernising business, but it's also about rinsing a tax system.
Yeah, but that's not their fault, is what I'm saying. It's
the fault of
the people that write the tax rules. And if they can't write the tax rules the right way...
So what you're saying is...
What I'm saying is...
I should lump the government in with Sir Philip.
Well, I don't think Sir Philip Green is a plank. I mean, he may be a thoroughly unlikable individual. But, I mean, again, it's not his fault that he's done something which is rather unkind to his employees. But it doesn't make him a plank, I don't think. I mean, it makes him a bit of a sharp operator, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
It is a sharp operator, but on the other hand...
But he shouldn't have done it.
No, he shouldn't have done it. But I also, or maybe he should have done it in terms of he should have done it. I think if you make that much money and you are unable to lead by example once you've made your money, by making good decisions, by leading by example, by innovating or by selling out, so let somebody else do it to protect the jobs, then I think it is plankism. And I think it is plankery because you have become so arrogant.
Yeah.
In yourself and in so much of your bubble, in the same way that we're talking to Rawls before, you become so rich and so wealthy and so detached from reality that you forget the fact that you are in a position of responsibility. If you have that much money above a certain, and I don't know what the level is, I don't know whether it's 10 million, 20 million or 50 million, if you have that amount of money, there is much more responsibility on you as an individual to lead by example.
Yes, but he didn't get all that money by being responsible, did he? That's the problem.
No, he got it by rinsing and stripping.
I always thought the best sort of revenge for anyone for him would be for his wife, who he gave all of his shares to divorce him and just dump him and say, right, I'm taking the yacht, I'm taking the houses, I'm taking the cars, cheerio, I've got all the stuff.
I mean, would you want that
yacht?
Would be funny. It's a bit vulgar.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Anyway, what's your second one?
My second one is going to be Professor Neil Ferguson.
Ah, yes.
He said that it's been very difficult at times recently because of all the hate mail he's been receiving, and that some people, i.e. the public, just like to have a bogeyman to blame things on.
Yeah.
So essentially, he is now the victim. And let's remember who this man is. This is a man who is responsible for our first lockdown.
Yep.
The data that was used, the modelling that was used, the projections that were used. Now, this is also the government's fault, of course,
yes,
because looking at his track record, it wasn't so good, was it? He got it wrong on, what, the swine flu?
Everything.
Various bird flus.
He's never got anything right.
He's never got anything right in his life.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yeah.
About these people, because this is where we in society go wrong. We confuse somebody who is an expert in a particular area with somebody who can see into the future. And we allow these people to take their expertise from the past and their experiences and the fact that, yes, they do. I'm sure he knows a lot more about whether it's viruses or anything else. But what he cannot do, any more than you or me, is look into the future. And also, we know that every single economic model is wrong.
Mm.
Always.
Yeah.
76% of all statistics are made up.
Yeah.
We know that. So why do we trust these people still?
Well, I think we're not going to in the future. Well, the public aren't.
Well,
anyway.
I worry that actually we've been doing this for a lot longer than anybody knew, that government has actually been being run by these people on almost every subject. You know, so they go to them and say, let's get the model on this. You know, so if we do this, that what will happen next? And then they get told what will happen next.
Well, I'm going to come back to that in my next plank. But let's remember why this guy might have been getting hate mail.
OK.
Let's remember. What was it?
I think we should, I feel as if I could have a nice glass or something and we could be here for a while.
Exactly right.
But he came up with all these rules and restrictions, and then obviously he was caught red-handed.
He was.
Well, trying to get his leg over with this woman.
Twice.
Yeah.
The German married woman.
So maybe that's the reason why he got the hate mail, not because he's a bogeyman.
Yeah, but the people who came up with the rules, they seem to be the people who are least likely and able to stick to them.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Well, he was the guy as well, was he not, who said the reason he thought it was all right was because he'd already had coronavirus, right? We're still being told by the government, oh, there's no guarantee that you can't get it again. I mean, poor old Boris locked himself away for 2 weeks on the grounds that he might have become one of the 6 people in the entire known universe who actually got it twice.
Was he a plank for that?
We got him on last two weeks in a row. Boris has been very high up on that.
Very high. But who could do some modelling for us on just how much those wrong decisions have cost us?
Well, the government supposedly have done a cost-benefit analysis, but the end result—but the end result of the cost-benefit analysis is that they don't know.
Yeah.
That was their answer. Their answer was, "We're not sure."
They basically say we can't compare, but we think it would be worse if we didn't do this. So great, wonderful.
Because to have the people who are telling us what to do undermining their very own policies, we all know how damaging that is, and we also know how that changed. I dare say, if neither of those things had happened, so if Professor Dudar Ferguson had not fouled up, you know, because he was more interested in trousering and all that sort of misbehaviour and all that stuff, and had just stuck to the rules, and we hadn't had that episode, and if we hadn't had the Barnard Castle, you know, spectacle thing, we as a society probably would have been more observant to the rules, and we might have been in a position where there was less of an escape, if you like, of the virus, and we would have had.
I don't know if that's true. I think we've sort of over-egged the influence those episodes had.
Yeah,
on
I mean, no, we haven't.
I think it didn't make.
Well, it didn't make any difference. It didn't make any difference to me. I mean, none of this has made any difference to me. You know, I've done what I thought was the right thing to do since the beginning. At the beginning, I was much more likely to do what I was told. Now, I'm much less likely to do what I'm told because, quite frankly, a lot of it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, has your behaviour changed because of that Scottish MP that went up the damn
country?
No,
not at all.
No.
Have you become, though, more resistant to instruction?
I've always been resistant to instruction.
Well,
I mean, yeah, I
no,
suffer
but have
from...
you become more resistant?
No, it's not possible. I mean, I suffer from defiance syndrome. which basically means that the more you tell me to do something, the less I'm likely to do it.
Fantastic.
And it's just something I've always had. I don't know what it is. But, I mean, here's the thing about Ferguson and about this whole nonsensical kind of modelling system. We did a sort of experiment on the radio a few weeks ago, and I said to people, you know, give me your examples of, you know, what you can extrapolate. And somebody said, if it falls with 4 inches of rain today, if that doesn't stop, in, you know, 2 weeks, we'll all be flooded out. We'll be underwater. And that's kind of what they do. They go, today we had 4 inches of rain. The fact that you won't have another 4 inches of rain ever, probably, in any other given day, means that they can extrapolate that, you know, in a week's time, you'll be flooded.
But it's the same with all the environmental nonsense that we receive.
Yeah.
It's extrapolated data. Apparently, Greta thinks
we're all going to be extinct in 10 years, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, when I was growing up in the 1970s, we were all going to die from acid rain and something.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that in the 1970s, we ate a lot of E-numbers. I haven't died yet.
No. I mean, I can't remember what I did in the 70s. I'm very happy that you can still remember it, but there we are. You know,
that's a whole other episode.
The 80s.
What happened to me in the
80s? You can forget the 80s. I was in New York for the whole of the 80s. Didn't sleep for 10 years. You know, so anyway.
You probably can't remember any of that, no.
No, I don't. Now, my second, is the BBC, who frequently appear as a bogeyman on this particular show. But there's so many reasons this time for the BBC, but particularly it's a BBC Radio Lincolnshire individual who has caused it. Now, I've always banged on about the fact that they shouldn't have as many radio stations as they do, and probably BBC Lincolnshire is one of the ones they shouldn't have. There's about 64 local news, local sort of BBC radios, right? This is a guy called Steve Thompson, who's a football commentator, and of course, all football commentators have to have nicknames, so he's known as Tomo, because that's what football commentators get called, right? Now, you might be familiar with the term handbags, but whenever there's one of these kind of punch-ups on the football field, it's generally referred to as handbags by everybody who's ever watched football, who's ever been involved in football, because it's two grown men sort of flailing their arms around each other, and it's not particularly damaging. It's not particularly dangerous,
but
right?
But also, it's when an incident isn't serious.
Yes, it's basically
so it's
kind
like
of
handbags at all. They, like have handbags sort of, like, they didn't have fisticuffs.
It's a phrase which has been used since time immemorial. Not always just about football. You can use it about two men fighting in a pub if you like. But anyway, he gets suspended, right? Because he said the handbags, because of one word, he was suspended. And part of the case against him was that a few weeks earlier, he'd been heard to describe somebody as a bit of a drama queen. And suddenly, these are now words which apparently you cannot utter.
But this is something that the BBC have been doing. I remember when I was talking to you the other day about this, about how the sports commentators have been given so much different training, so many different rules and all these different words they can't use, like nitty gritty was one of them, and there were various other words that have just been banned.
Right.
Just outright banned because they have tenuous links to slavery at some point.
Well, I mean, handbags, I presume, is a gender specific phrase which you can't use. But I mean, it's ludicrous because
maybe he should use the phrase man bags.
Maybe he should have said man
bags at dawn.
Yeah, but maybe that would have been okay. I don't know. But
that would be more funny.
It's kind of ridiculous that because most people.
I've had a man bag. Have you had a man bag?
I did have a man bag, yeah, many years ago.
Great.
Well, I got mine when I worked in that Hungarian bakery that I've told you about in Hampstead, because the guy who was Hungarian who ran it had a little man bag, and he said, I should have one as well. And so he was kind of surrogate father. It was great on holidays.
Little satchel?
No, it was more like an actual handbag that you carried. Oh. You know, sort of like a small ladies' bag, kind of, you know, very useful.
You could have you guys
have it great because you can just walk around with a bag and all your things are in it, whereas we have to stuff things in our pockets. Or wear a rucksack, which I refuse to do. Anyway, I think we're taking too long for this, so we need to hurry up. So let's do your third nomination.
George Useless.
Yes.
Eustace.
Useless is a great name, isn't it? It's so good.
It is very good. So that wasn't contrived at all. Didn't shoehorn that.
Doesn't matter. I mean, it just becomes a slip of the tongue. It's that simple.
But there are so many of them in that sort of band of uselessness.
Anyway. Yes.
The point that they...
Boris Useless, Matt Useless.
Exactly, just Useless.
George Useless.
Although it's not as good. I mean, I always enjoy a story if it uses the word fiasco.
Yes.
If something turns
That's
into
a great
fiasco.
Word.
And I think that the whole Scotch egg thing has turned into an absolute fiasco of epic proportions.
It really has.
And the thing I also love about it is that people have spent a long time looking into the history of Scotch eggs to find out where they were made, and there's this row actually as to whether they came from Whitby,
right?
And the name Scotch eggs, nothing to do with Scotland at all. I think it's J. Scott or W. Scott,
right.
Something up there that they had it. But actually, those ones were eggs with fish paste around them and then breadcrumbs. So they didn't invent them. They were invented in the 18th century by Fortnum and Mason.
Really?
Fortnum and Mason, also the first people to sell Heinz baked beans in the country, believe it or not.
Fantastic.
Anyway.
This is very interesting
this is
trivia.
Great stuff, yeah.
Every day is a school day.
Right.
This is the sort of stuff that you get if you listen to the early breakfast show.
Yeah, I'm not usually up early enough, I'm afraid.
Anyway,
dynamites of knowledge.
So Fortnum and Mason, the other thing is that everybody assumes that the Scotch egg is always pork. It's not.
No.
The very first ones were chicken.
Mm. I've had a haggis Scotch egg.
I've had a haggis Scotch egg.
There you go.
There are vegan ones, there are vegetarian ones, there are beetroot ones, there are all sorts of things. And
I'm not having a beetroot one. That's not happening. I mean, there's no way.
Fortnum's do them. They look absolutely delicious, seriously. but the thing is about these things, though, that they are not a meal. They are described as a snack. They were designed as a snack. So the reason that they were made in the first place is so that the posh people used to go to Fortnum's, pick up their rations, if you like, because they're going off to the country house.
Mm.
And so they'd
be sat
in the back
of
the carriage for a rather long time, and they might need a little snack that wouldn't go off. Anyway, so they...
And you wouldn't need a knife to cut.
No, exactly. Anyway, so he just walked into the trap. He walked into the trap. You know that when you're asked that, well, would you, you know, can you have a Scotch egg? He should know what the size of a Scotch egg is, and he should say, no,
yeah.
That is part of a meal. If it was ordered as a starter, yes, of course you can have that. Mm. But as a meal, no. Everybody knows what a Scotch egg is.
But this is why we've reached this ridiculous place where ridiculous questions have to be answered.
And what he should have said is, you can use your own personal judgment or the establishment that you're in to decide whether it's
actually
a substantial meal.
Even more important than that, they should not have put that law in the first place.
Well, yes,
or that rule in. It's stupid.
I'm told, by the way, and I haven't... I'm told this is verifiable, but I haven't checked it myself, that you can apparently go to a pub and have a soft drink or a coffee without having any food.
Yes, you can.
Which tells you that this is all about, as you were saying earlier, an attack on drinking.
Correct. I think it is, and it's definitely an attack on pubs, that there still exist pubs outside of London and big cities that only sell drink.
Yeah.
That don't do
meals wet pubs,
like
but,
the gastro
but,
pubs. Exactly. So, you know, it's basically just laying them to waste.
But it's... So, as somebody who... So, I'm chair of a tennis club. So, it's a sports club. It has tennis, but it has a gym and squash and various
You're not allowed to play tennis at the moment, are you?
We are from tomorrow.
Okay.
So tomorrow,
because remember they had that ridiculous rule where you could make love to your wife, but you couldn't play tennis with her.
Correct. It's ridiculous.
I mean, not that you would necessarily want to do both.
Not necessarily, although both involve balls.
You do.
Da-ding.
Thank you.
Anyway,
we'll edit that out.
probably for the best.
Go on, get on with it.
Anyway, so
this is the longest plank of the week I've ever done.
I know we'll still be here next week. But this is absolutely ridiculous, that it just shows the stupidity of the rule.
It does.
And as a result of that, they really should be going back to the drawing board and saying, we are laying waste a very important part of our business. I don't mind. If somebody can show me the evidence and say, this makes a difference and stops the spread of the virus and saves lives, fine, I'm all for it. I will do it. But what I find absolutely ridiculous is when we are given rule after rule after rule, stop doing it. You've done it in the past. People will disobey. Stop the disobedience, if you like, if that's a word, and just do it properly. I think he highlighted what a plank he is, but also what a plank, if you like, this whole government of this piece of legislation, which is nonsensical, makes no sense.
Exactly right. Your final one?
Well, I will keep mine nice and short and concise.
Yes, very well done.
Police or sage?
Well, I guess we've sort of done the sage lot to death, haven't we? So it should be the police.
I wanted to say about their Christmas rules, which are just ridiculous.
Yeah.
They told you how to make potatoes.
Yeah, they told you how to make them, but how to dish them
and
out.
And you had to stick Granny by the window, and you can't sing too loudly, and if you do, you have to do it all in the same direction.
Oh.
And
board games.
You can only drink your drinks outside by a fire pit. I'm not sure how many...
It's not Southern California we're living in. I mean, you know.
How many fire pits there are?
You know how you have a bird at Christmas time. Mine is going to be flicked in their direction.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It is ridiculous. Yeah, I think you should go with the police.
Okay, the police, after that little intro. The police have been, I think public trust in the police is probably at an all-time low at the moment.
I think so, yeah.
I'd say just with their mixed messages, their lack of consistency, their absolute hypocrisy, the way that they treated BLM protests, Extinction Rebellion protests, and the way that they are now treating anti-lockdown protests is just extraordinary. And over the weekend, they were out in London. There were so many police there for this relatively small protest.
Yeah.
And they were harassing, manhandling people who are in their elder years.
Yeah.
There's one video that's been circulating around social media on Facebook and Twitter of this man who must be at least 70 being grabbed and harassed and pushed to the floor. And then you have police officers sort of giving cover.
And there's loads of them, aren't there?
So that I guess people can't film it or whatever, because there's no one trying to attack from the outside, so they must be trying to cover it up or something. And then you've got, I heard on talk radio as well, I think it was with Julia, she was interviewing a chap who's up in Newcastle studying, and you've got the police knocking on their doors, checking that they're...
saying, we want to come in and see how many people are in the house.
Yeah.
He's like, why?
And we've got so far down this road that I think we've forgotten as a nation what freedom looks like. Mm. Because at the moment it seems to be, well, health versus everything else, and that's not a sustainable way to... run a liberal democracy,
but
live in one.
Doesn't it come back, though, to this point about whether the regulation is there to do the right job or whether it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy or something that they can just throw in because it makes it look like they're taking action? And I think part of what we're seeing is we've got politicians who have taken the wrong decisions. They're trying to cover that up. We know that if the opposition was in there, they would have made all sorts of mistakes as well. I'm not trying to say that the government should be blamed for absolutely everything, and they've tried to do their best in a difficult circumstance. But stop covering your tracks. You've made mistakes. Don't make them again. Don't make bad ordering decisions. Don't make bad policy decisions. Don't ask people to do stuff that is nonsensical.
Yeah. But equally, you know, back in the early part of the spring and summer, you know, when we were still told that, you know, you weren't supposed to be mixing in groups of more than 10 or whatever it was, and there were marches going on in London, despite the fact that technically they shouldn't have happened, the police weren't steaming in and arresting people.
Whereas this weekend
they were, apparently because it's now illegal to go on a demonstration. Well, hang on, it was illegal when Black Lives Matter was doing it, and it was illegal when Extinction Rebellion were doing it, but they weren't piling into them.
And police have the right to act with discretion.
Yeah.
So, which they're clearly not doing.
No.
When
and
it
I mean,
comes to anti-lockdown.
The guy in Newcastle is a good example because, sure, I mean, even though apparently it was like COVID officials or something, or COVID marshals who called the police on this guy because they thought he had too many people in his house. I mean, really? Get lost. I mean, and he did quite the right thing, and I think they went away. But they didn't have to go and knock on his door and be so ridiculous about it, did they?
I think we have ended up in a very sad position where authority is going to be challenged as a result of the ineptitude of people putting authority in place, when it's there to make us feel supported. And of course you need an element of security and authority and rules and all this stuff. But when you have rules that become nonsensical, people then become disappointed.
They don't actually follow the real rules, the good rules either.
And when you have a police force that is so highly politicised and it's visible to everyone who watches these videos that they're treating people differently depending on the cause, that's when the trust is gone. And I just think it's
But the trust started to go with the police, though, when you started to see them parking outside, whether it's Starbucks or McDonald's or anything else, filling their faces and drinking all the things.
I think it's when they bend the knee, to be honest.
Oh, that as well.
Yeah, I think that was probably the beginning of the end, to be honest. My final one is going to be Keir Starmer, who also appears quite regularly on this particular...
Captain Hindsight.
Plank of the Week show. Well, Captain Hindsight, who has now not only got no hindsight, but he's actually got no foresight either, because he didn't see all sorts of things coming his way. And what he's done this week is absolutely, you know, taken the biscuit, as far as I'm concerned, which is that the most important vote, which we are about to have, by the time this comes out, it will have happened, on the new lockdown procedures, which if the Labour Party had any kind of, I don't know, character or any kind of belief system, they would be voting either for the lockdown rules or they'd be voting against them. But what they're doing, are they going to abstain? Abstention in Parliament means that all of the people who they represent, all of the people who voted all of those MPs in, now have no say in what happens to the lockdown rules. Now, he's saying it's so that they can highlight the idea of all the Tory rebellion and the Tory revolt. Well, you can still highlight that by voting with the government, which is what they did last time. You know, and it seems to me that they have no belief system. They don't know what's going on. Momentum still, every single week, are putting out sort of, you know, pamphlets saying we want Jeremy Corbyn back in as a member of the parliamentary party. He couldn't stop Jeremy Corbyn being allowed back into the Labour Party. He doesn't seem to be in control of anything. He doesn't seem to know what he wants to do. He now says he's in favour of Brexit when he used to be against it. I mean, the guy is a complete plank, in my view, and he has never, ever been anything else. And luckily, people seem to have started to see through.
I think it's immoral to abstain
from
an important vote.
I think so.
Like, make up your mind and whip it where you want it to go.
Exactly.
Don't then just back out of it. Like,
I mean,
it's good politics,
though. He could have actually taken a really brave stand and voted it down.
Yeah.
Voted against it. And together with the Tory rebels, they might have actually defeated the government. And then there would be no restrictions at all. And then they would have to have a proper emergency debate about what to do.
But then, you see, what it then comes down to, which I think is really important, is I want to support the government because this is really important and we are a certain way down the line. The vaccine isn't far away. There are some things that we should probably be doing to make sure that we don't allow the virus to spread and to make sure that certain people are kept safe and secure. Fine, I get it. But I'd want to know that the rules that they're putting in place are sensible. And when you see stupid situations like the ones that we currently have, that the rules make no sense. And everybody is saying they make no sense. And older people are saying they make no sense. People of all political persuasions are saying they make no sense. Then you're looking for political leadership. And so it's inept.
It is inept. And that's why he's going to be on Plank of the Week. So there we are. We've got our nine. I shall carry one over from last week, which might well be Sadiq Khan. Because
he's always
carried over. Yeah, absolutely right. So now we have to whittle it all down to three, as you'll remember the way the process works. So why don't, Emily, you choose your favourite one of James's, and then you can choose mine and I'll choose yours.
Right. So what are your three? Prince Harry, yeah. We've got Sir Philip Green, or Philip Green, whatever.
And yeah, you might lose that,
George Useless.
George Useless.
I think I've got to go for George
You've
Useless.
You've got to go for Useless.
Really?
It's too good.
Particularly as the Scotch eggs have been the story of the day.
They really have. George Useless is a good one, I think. That's very good. Right, so you have to pick one of mine, The Guardian, the BBC, or Sir Keir Starmer.
Which was Facebook locked into?
Was that locked in with The Guardian on the grounds that they're sort of similarly lefty,
now, you see, the
one-track-minded political organs.
Now, the last time, because I championed Captain Hindsight being Plank of the Week.
Yes.
I feel as if I can't do it again.
Okay.
So I have to step back from that, even though he is.
All right.
I also have championed the BBC being Plank, so I think I have to step back from that. And I would like to highlight, and I think Guardian and Facebook...
Yes.
...because of the ways that both of them are operating, which undermine our ability to have sensible discourse and debate.
Yes, I think that's very good. Well, I'll accept that. The Guardian for me. And your three were?
Mark Drakeford.
Yeah.
The Welsh Minister.
Yeah. And that's it. I think you don't have to go any further.
I think it's got to be Drakeford, hasn't it? It was Neil Ferguson and the police.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they're all good. But I think Drakeford, who has never yet been Plank of the Week, I think should definitely be in there. So Drakeford, The Guardian.
And Useless.
And Useless. I think it's got to be Drakeford, isn't it?
I think for our Welsh friends, it's got to be.
I mean, how often are you going to have
you
them?
See, I'm just going to put up a last flag
okay.
for Useless. Because
Useless.
Because Useless has undermined the whole government and Wales. Because he's highlighted how stupid the rule is.
There is no Welsh egg, is there?
Well, I don't know about the Welsh egg, but what I know is that as a result of him almost rendering pubs useless...
Yep.
But this guy has told the Welsh they can't have a pint at the pub.
But they can have a Scotch egg.
But they can have a Scotch egg. I mean, maybe you just make them joint planks on the basis that the whole of the Welsh community and the whole of the English community, we've been let down by senior politicians just being planks.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to have the casting vote because I'm going for Drakeford. You're going for Useless.
I'm going for Useless,
So it's going to be down to you.
I'm going to go for my nom.
Okay.
Well, you might do.
So it's got to be... Oh.
But are you happy with that?
That's a bit passive aggressive.
I don't know, am
I? I've been working for Talk Radio for 3 years. Are you happy with that decision?
Oh, goodness.
Come on.
I am, so you stand by my decision.
Okay, so it's the headline about Useless, or would you rather write about Mark Drakeford?
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Your final answer. So it's Mark Drakeford, then.
It is.
Welsh First Minister of Wales. Well done, Mr. Drakeford. You've managed to make the great honour Plank of the Week. Well done.
Well
done. Thank you to James Max. Thank you to Emily Carver. We'll see you next week.